Board Game Bros.
Hello, listeners.
Hey, everybody.
It's another episode of the Board Game Brothers podcast. I'm Jeffrey Craig.
And I'm Matthew Craig.
We're brothers in real life.
And game designers in real life.
And we are back at it again with a game review episode where we are going to talk about one particular game. We're going to talk about how it's played. We're going to talk about the strategies in the game. And then we're going to talk about the game's design. So, yes. Matthew, what game are we talking about today?
We are talking about Photosynthesis, designed by Hjalmar Hawk and published by Blue Orange Games in 2017. And as far as awards go, it won Golden Geek Best Artwork and Presentation, which is probably in no doubt thanks to artist Sabrina Miraman. And then it also won like Mensa Select 2018, and it was nominated for a ton of other stuff.
All right. So for a brief description of what Photosynthesis is about, in Photosynthesis, players compete with one another to plant trees in order to catch sunlight. As the trees catch sunlight, they also cast shadows that may prevent other trees from catching light. Players spend sunlight to plant seeds, grow them into large trees, and eventually cash the large trees in for points. After three full rotations of the sun around the board, the player with the most points wins. So that's the gist of it. It's a hexagonal board. There is a little piece that indicates where the sun is, what the direction of the sunlight is, and the trees that you place on this hexagonal board will catch sunlight or cast shadows or both, which can cover up your own trees or your opponent's trees and prevent them from gaining sunlight. So let's get into greater detail with the gameplay of Photosynthesis.
Right.
So like I said, it's a hexagonal board. So there's six directions that the sunlight comes from. So that means a game plays over 18 rounds, or 18 turns, I should say. And, I guess 18, I don't know. They're interchangeable in this game. And, the board is also sort of segmented into three or four rings. So the center of the board is just one hexagon. Then there's a ring of hexagons around that. That's the third ring. Second ring is around that, and the first ring is around that.
Right, yeah.
So it goes one, two, three, and then the center.
Right. And these are important because of how you get points in this game.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so over the course of the game, you will be sort of upgrading and growing your trees on the board until it reaches the highest stage, in which it can't be upgraded anymore, but instead it can be turned into mulch, and the amount of points you get when you do that is based on which ring you're in on the board,
mm-hmm.
or which ring that tree came from.
And the closer you are to the center of the board, the more points you would get for that tree. So the center of the board gets the most points when you mulch that tree, and then it descends going outwards. I think for a general, the first tree mulched in the center is worth, I believe, 20, is it 22 or 24 points?
22 sounds right.
I think it's 22 points for the first tree mulched in the center of the board. And then the first tree mulched in the exterior ring, the first ring of the board, is only worth 14 points, just to right. show you the difference in points. And then in between is in between. Now, we say the first tree because there's the way that points are collected is there's these stacks of discs that have the points on them, and they're stacked in descending order. And when you mulch a tree in a particular zone of the board, you take the top chip from that stack. So the top chip of the center stack has 22 points on it. The chip below that is 21 points, and the chip below that is 20, and then 19. So the first person to mulch a tree in the center of the board gets the highest number of points. Same is true for the outside of the board. The first person to mulch a tree there gets the most points. The second chip in the outside stack, I believe, is 13. And there might be a second 13 and so on. 12, 11. So it's important to, if you want to get the most points, mulch your trees closer to the center of the board, but also be the first person to do so.
Right.
Let's see, what else gameplay? So a tree has three stages of growth, actually four, the seed. Everyone starts with two small trees on the board. You could call it the second stage, but it's like the first tree stage. It comes after the seed stage. Everyone starts with two of those on the board. And then you start the game by catching the sunlight, and then everyone takes turns spending that sunlight. You start with one player, and they get to spend as much sunlight as they want. And then when they're finished spending sunlight, whether they run out or choose to stop there, then it passes to the next player until every player has taken their turn spending sunlight. Then the sun rotates, and the first player token moves to the next player clockwise. So there's a rotating first player. Players are spending their sunlight, you know, one after the other. It's not like any other kind of action structure. So small trees collect one sunlight if they can catch it, and they cast a shadow that is one space long. Medium trees catch two sunlight and cast a shadow that is two spaces long. Large trees get three sunlight and they cast a shadow that's three stages or spaces long.
Right. So when we talk about casting shadow, depending on where the sun is on the board, think of it like you're drawing a straight line across the board from that side to the opposite side.
Yeah, this is a hexagon board. There, you can sort of every corner of the board is where the sun rests for a turn and casts the sunlight and shadows. And it's essentially like the board becomes rows of hexagons.
Right. So when you're looking at these rows, the trees cast shadows the opposite direction from where the sunlight is for that turn. And then this determines whether or not the trees behind it can get sunlight. Mm-hmm. Because if a tree is being cast shadow on by a tree of the same height or bigger, then you don't get any sunlight for that tree.
Right.
What this means is that if you have a tree that is a small tree, so one space, and then right behind it is a tree that's one size, then the tree behind it won't get any sunlight.
Right. A small tree directly behind another small tree does not collect sunlight.
Right. And then
same thing, a medium tree up to two spaces behind another medium tree will not collect sunlight.
And then likewise for large trees up to three spaces behind a large tree.
Mm-hmm. And of course, a smaller tree will not collect sunlight when being cast by when in the shadow of a larger tree.
Right. Now, if you've noticed, that means that from what we've said, a large tree is not blocked by a smaller tree's shadow.
Mm-hmm.
So if in front of a medium tree is a small tree, that medium tree will still get sunlight because the small tree isn't tall enough to block it.
Right. And it will get the full amount of sunlight that a medium tree gets, which is two.
Yeah.
It doesn't lose out on any sunlight. Okay, so now we keep talking about these trees. It's important to note that each player has a different color of tree. There are up to four players can play this game. So there's green trees, yellow trees, orange trees, and blue trees. So when the sunlight is being cast across the board, you know, each player collects sunlight from their trees and it gets counted up on their board. If you have leftover sunlight at the end of a turn that you didn't spend, that carries over into the future turns. So you don't have to spend all of your sunlight on a given turn if you don't want to. Let's see.
Right. So
is there any other mechanics we need to talk about?
Well, so here's what you do with the sunlight. You start with two small trees at the edges of the board on the first ring. And to actually place trees and grow trees further inward, first you have to start by planting a seed.
Mm-hmm.
You start with, I want to say, two seeds in your available inventory.
Mm-hmm.
And it costs one sunlight to plant a seed. And every tree can plant a seed a distance away based on how tall a tree is. It's the same distance as casting shadows, so a small tree can only plant seeds directly next to it in the six cells surrounding it. And then a tree that is a medium tree can plant a seed two spaces away, and a large tree can plant a seed three spaces away.
It's important to note that these don't have to be in straight lines.
Right. You can do like a kind of curved knight's move in a way.
Yeah.
So planting a seed costs one sunlight. And then from there, every time you want to upgrade that seed or that tree, cedar tree, you need to first have a tree available in your available inventory. What I mean is the stuff on the board or on your board isn't actually plantable. Instead, you have to purchase it. It goes into your inventory, and then you can plant it or upgrade it.
Right. You could sort of think of it like every player has like a shop where they can purchase trees and seeds. And once you purchase a tree or seed, it goes into your, like you said, it goes into your inventory, and then you pay sunlight to put it on the board. It also costs sunlight to purchase those trees and seeds from your little shop. At the start of the game, everyone starts with two small trees on the board, plus they have two seeds. I believe, is it three or four small trees?
Three small trees.
And a medium tree.
Right.
So you start with two seeds, three small trees, and a medium tree in your inventory.
Right. And then you'll have four seeds, four small trees, three medium trees, and three large trees
on your board. Just two large
trees. Two large trees. Really?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. So you have those on your board in like different spaces. Mm-hmm. And then each space on your board that has those items will also show their cost and sunlight to purchase.
Mm-hmm.
The first trees you buy from these spaces will cost less. So like the first medium tree you buy costs two. And then I think the second one also costs two.
The first small tree you buy costs two.
Yeah, that's what I meant. First small tree costs two and maybe the second one. Mm-hmm. But then the next one will cost three after that.
Yeah, sunlight.
Right.
Everything costs sunlight in this game. And then the medium trees cost three, four, and five. Or possibly three, four, and four.
I think it's three, four.
Three, four,
and then
four,
large and then trees are four trees. And five.
Correct. So the gist of it is that the more trees you have out on the board or in your inventory, the more you'll have to pay for the next tree from your shop.
Oh, and seeds I think cost 1, 1, 2, 2.
Yeah.
Okay.
When you upgrade a tree or a seed, the piece that you remove from the board goes back into your shop in the most expensive slot that it can fit into. And then you replace it on the board with your new piece. So when you upgrade a small tree, you put a medium tree on the board, and the small tree that was on the board goes back into your shop. If your shop is full, like it is at the start of the game, then if you try to put a piece back into it, it just gets lost for the rest of the game.
Right. It goes back in the box pretty much.
Yes.
Right. So there is one other like caveat to this. Which is that any space on the board, you can only do one action per turn.
Yes.
So, like, it costs sunlight, obviously, to upgrade trees, but you can still only upgrade a tree once per turn on one given space. So, like, you can plant a seed, but you can't turn that into a tree on the same turn. You have to wait till the next turn.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, you can't upgrade from a seed to a small and a small to a medium in the same turn.
Right, and you can't upgrade to a large and mulch on the same turn.
Right. This is important to note because that means it takes 5 turns to plant a tree and then mulch it at minimum.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The full life cycle.
So that is basically every rule of the game. So now let's get a little bit into strategy.
Right.
So there's a couple like important details that I think we should point out about like just the shape and the functions of the board. Like, for example, the corners of the board are completely exposed to sunlight for 3 turns guaranteed every rotation of the sun, because there cannot be another tree in front of them to block the sunlight. So I think because of that, it's generally best practices to put your trees on the corners of the board at the start of the game. And the way that they're placed at the start of the game is like there's a first player determined. In this game, it's determined by the lowest or the youngest player, the lowest age player. they place the first tree, then it goes in turn order, placing one tree, and then turn order again, placing the second tree. So anyways, taking the corners is pretty important. In a 4-player game, unfortunately, I guess 2 players will be forced to put trees elsewhere. The side opposite the starting position of the sun, so the sun starts in the same corner every game you play and rotates clockwise, The quarter of the board opposite the sun is generally, I think we determined, the best place to place your tree.
Right.
At the start of the game, just because, like, once you really get things started, because you start with small trees, and so you can only place seeds next to those trees and grow them next to those trees. So by the time you've grown a couple new trees, the sun would have rotated to your, like, sort of arc of the board that you're totally open to, and you're cashing in on those trees, generally guaranteed.
Right, yeah. If you plant a tree the first turn and then upgrade it the next two turns, then by the time the sun makes its fourth rotation, you'll be able to get the sunlight from that medium tree.
You mean it's by the time it's rotated four corners around the board? Four times around the board, right?
No, it doesn't, when it's in its fourth spot.
Yeah, I'm referring to a rotation as going all the way around.
Okay. Its fourth position.
Yes.
Right. The opposite side from the sun is good because it lets you, like, plan ahead for those first few turns and then, like you said, immediately cash out without too much risk.
Mm-hmm. Now, the next important detail about the board is, obviously, there's only one space at the center of the board, and if everyone tries to get there as fast as they can, there's always just one player that's guaranteed going to get there first, just due to how the first player token rotates clockwise after every turn. So if you realize that you're the person that gets to go to the center of the board first because you get to take the first turn on the turn that any player could have reached it, then that's good for you. And it's also important to note that when you have a large tree on the center of the board, its shadow is cast all the way to the edge of the board. Yeah. So having a large tree at the center of the board is very strong because it's very hard to obstruct on every side. Generally, it'll be unobstructed on most of its sides. And every turn, you'll probably be covering up at least one or two of your opponent's trees with it, with its shadow.
Right. Now, if you're not first to get to that tree, then, like, don't worry about it for the rest of the game.
Right. In fact, if you aren't able to reach the center of the board first, then it's better to focus on getting as many spaces in the second most center ring. I call it the third ring because the way that they're labeled is with, like, a number of leaves. So it's like the one leaf ring, the two leaf ring, the three leaf ring, and then the four leaf center. So getting that third ring secured, as many spaces as you can, is your next best bet because those are the second most points.
Right. If you think about it like the number of trees you can have on the board, it's easier to get trees like that are a moderate size in the outside just because that's what you start with, but those don't really give you any points or any sunlight. I mean, no, they don't give you any points. That's what I meant.
They don't give you many points. Yeah.
Right. And so the third ring gets you a pretty good amount of points compared to the fourth ring, while also letting you place and grow two trees instead of just one.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, in the same amount of time that somebody... Well, it's not quite the same amount of time, but you're able to sort of multitask better that way.
Mm-hmm.
Another way to look at it is with large trees in the third row, you can still have a medium tree in the second row and a small tree in the first row, and you'll be getting a lot of sunlight for, you know, at least one turn, if not two or three.
Mm-hmm. I want to point out another feature of this game that's important for strategy, and that is that the cheapest third ring point chip is, or like the lowest cost, the lowest point cost point chip for the third ring is still higher than the highest first cost of the second ring. However, the lowest point chip for the second ring is lower than the highest point chip of the first ring. So what I'm getting at is there's like there's sort of a point to getting a lot of points from the third ring, because, like, even if you're not the first person to cash in on those points, you're still going to be better off than if you went for the second ring. And it's better off to go for the first ring before you go for the second ring, because if you have competition in the second ring, there's a chance that you could have been worse off than if you had just focused on the first ring, which again, you could have scored much quicker anyways, since you start with trees there.
Right. Yeah. Sort of like the first ring can act as a emergency boost, especially towards the end of the game.
Mm-hmm.
Because I mean, since it takes 5 turns to plant and mulch a tree, if there's less than 5 turns left, then you need to figure out what your quickest way to get that large tree and then mulch it is. Just because, like, the way points work, you get the most points from, you know, mulching trees, and a lot of the point values are still kind of close together by a difference of, like, 2 or 3 points. So even just getting one more chip than your opponents can sometimes be super useful.
Sure.
So, like, you at least want to be even with the number of chips, I think.
So, another way of putting the point similarly is, like, it's really the only way to get points. It's not entirely the only way, because there is, you can get points for having sunlight left over in your inventory at the end of the game. But I think you can only get at most, like, 7 or 8 points from that. Whereas, like, the cheapest chip from the first ring is 9 points.
Right.
Which it'll probably never even get that low. Like, you're still probably getting at least 11 points from a tree that you mulched in the first ring. So so it's pretty much always better to mulch a tree than to just, like, save sunlight point-wise.
Yeah. Unless, obviously, you can't buy everything you need. Like, there's only 2 mm-hmm. turns left and you don't have any medium trees in your inventory.
Mm-hmm. But what I was saying mostly about the second ring is just that it's really not worth it point wise. Like the investment to point trade off in the second ring is actually probably slightly lower than the first ring if there is competition there.
Right. It's also worth noting that the first ring still lets you get guaranteed sunlight from your large trees.
Right.
Which isn't nothing.
If I had to rank the rings for points, it goes like, you know, the center, then the third, then the first, then the second.
Yeah.
And if I had to rank it for sunlight, you know, availability, it would go center, then first ring, then, I don't know, probably second and third.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think focusing on the center, focusing on the first ring, and focusing on the third ring are priorities.
Second ring is a means to an end. So, it's a vehicle.
So you and I have slightly different ideas of how you should sort of arrange your trees. There's sort of ideas of like frameworks that you can arrange your own trees in that can sort of like guarantee on average a good number of points and sunlight. I like to arrange my trees in line with each other so that they could eventually cast shadows on one another. Just because I like to be able to control the spaces that would cast shadows on my trees so that my opponents don't get to control them.
Right, yeah. This is sort of like, you know, proactively preventing that.
Mm-hmm. This is a concept in Go, like, your opponent's best move is your best move.
Yeah. Godo synthesis. So in a slightly different method, I try to, like, play around not having my own trees, like, interfere with each other. What this means is, if you look on the board, and then you look at, like, I'm trying to think of how to describe this vocally. So, around...
Well, you just stagger your trees so that, right, they never cast shadows on each other. Yeah, so right. Rather than putting them in straight lines with one another, you offset them by, like, a hexagon in either direction.
Right. This means that they can never cast shadows, so you're free to grow them and not worry about each other getting interrupted. I think this is at least useful when thinking about, like, getting multiple large trees in the third row, or the third ring, mm-hmm. is to try and stagger them this way. That way the large trees aren't directly competing. It also means the large trees will cover more of your opponent's area. Just because they're on, like, different axes, sort of.
Well, it's sort of wherever the sun is casting, they're in 3 different rows.
Yeah.
So they're either... So, yeah. So, it yeah, exactly. It's exactly that. Except I guess when the sun's on the opposite side, one of your trees is always in the corner, so that one's not casting any shadows. But yeah, when it's on your side of the board, your trees are always in three different rows, and so they're always affecting like the maximum number of spaces that your opponents could have.
Right. If you're going for like having two large trees in the third row or the third ring, I would definitely say that that's like a good thing to consider.
I think putting them in rows is slightly better because I put them one space away, which means that I have a tree in the first row. I have three trees in the first row, one tree in the third row.
Right.
Whereas in yours, you started out with one tree in the first row, two trees in the second row.
Well, that's, I'm not saying doing that specific opener. I'm just saying like have it so that there's two trees in the third row and like one tree in the second row. And then you can then have whatever trees in the first row.
So you're talking about moving that shape that you made one space away from the edge?
Yeah.
Okay. So that'll just take a while to set up.
Right. I think it's safer, though, for like an inward position. Mm-hmm. I think yours is better for playing around the edge.
Mm-hmm.
Which is probably more important early game because you kind of want to secure sunlight. I think in general, it's really useful to try and secure like one side of the board for yourself, if that makes sense. Yeah. As in like one side of the outermost ring.
If anything, that just means you'll have like one very good turn of sunlight that can sort of carry your weaker turns when the sun rotates to the other side.
Right. So like putting your two starting trees on the same edge, you know, on two corners of the same edge.
Mm-hmm.
And then like branching out so that one of them is going inward from there, and then from there you can then place another tree in the third row.
Okay. I want to stop talking about such specific like frameworks now.
Yeah.
Since it's probably a little confusing for the viewer, and get back to more general strategy points.
Right.
So like, for example, you don't want to grow or upgrade a tree the turn before it would be put in shadow. You would want to grow or upgrade a tree the turn it would be in shadow so that the next turn it comes out of shadow and you can start cashing in on it. Another way of saying that is to say, like, try and grow a tree so that in the next two turns it'll pay itself back.
Yeah.
Or it'll pay off whatever you spent to do it, to right. get it.
So we talk about, like, using trees to block lines of shadow, but you can also use seeds to do that. Because you can't place a seed where somebody else has a seed. So you can kind of think of placing seeds as like the cheapest way to directly block off a space from your opponents.
Yes.
It means that you're, you know, losing a seed for the moment, but you probably won't have too many issues with running out of seeds. Just because you do have so many and they're very cheap.
Mm-hmm.
And
eventually there might come a turn where you realize like, oh, I put that seed there just to control the space, but if I turn it into a tree now, it's going to get sunlight for the next three turns, so I might as well just do that.
Exactly.
And yeah, it's a cheap way to like secure spaces in the third ring or to secure the center. It's just to like toss a seed there or toss a bunch of seeds there as fast as you can.
Right. As far as like whether or not it's safe to lose pieces, I think it's definitely okay to lose one seed at minimum and one small tree at minimum because there's a lot of both of those.
Yeah.
Especially small trees.
I generally end up losing all of my extra small trees and all of my extra seeds in the games that I play. And right. it's not a terrible thing.
I would definitely try not to lose your medium trees, though, because you only get four of those, and those are like the main sort of engine pieces to getting sunlight. Mm-hmm. Because like even though large trees get you a lot of sunlight, they're also the only way to get points. Mm-hmm. And since you only have two. Yeah, so you need to keep them cycling through. So you don't really have a lot of room to place large trees simply to get points. Simply to get sunlight, sorry.
Sunlight, yeah.
Yeah. Also, I do want to mention that you don't need to buy things until you need them. This is sort of a kind of obvious thing, but I've seen players like buy things ahead of time. Like, you know, they'll have three sunlight and they'll be like, oh, well, eventually I'll need a small tree, so I'll buy that. But right. You can buy as much things as you want
You could kind of think of it like you could buy the small tree because you might need it later, but if you didn't buy it then, you'll still have that sunlight to buy it on a later turn.
Exactly.
But there might come a later turn where you realize like, oh, I could just buy and upgrade a medium tree to a large tree this turn. And you need 9 sunlight for that, or 8 to 9 sunlight for that, or I guess it's 7 to 8 sunlight. But if you had spent that 2 sunlight on an earlier turn, you might just find yourself 2 sunlight short. So it's better to just not do that and just wait until you actually need to buy something.
Exactly.
To build it.
It also lets you be more reactive to opponents who will go before you.
Mm-hmm.
Just in general.
So we mentioned that you can only perform one action per one space, and we mentioned that that means that you can't fully upgrade a tree and mulch it on the same turn. So when it comes to, I generally don't worry about this until the sun is on its last trip around the board. That's when I start to plan like how I'm going to mulch every large tree that I can. In addition to that point, like you're planning those turns ahead so that you can mulch as many trees as you can. You also want to realize like there comes a point where you're not going to be able to build another large tree. So you're just down to your last 2, and you don't want to mulch those until the very last turn, because at the end of the game, you do get a few bonus points for the extra sunlight you have left over. So keeping those large trees until the last minute so that they can generate more and more sunlight for you is important.
The only exception I would say is if you're competing over the last chip in a given ring.
Sure.
Because if you
or the last like 3 chips you could think of like, yeah, if either you're competing over the last chip or there's like 2 other players that could take the first chip from you.
Right.
Or the most expensive chip from you.
Right. When you mulch a tree and there's no more chips for that ring, you take the largest chip available from the next smallest ring.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the next further outward.
Right.
So that's just worth noting.
Yeah, there's so if you're competing, if you're like pressed for time, you can mulch a tree, because keeping that tree around every turn that you keep it around is generally just giving you 1 extra point at the end of the game. So you could just sort of weigh it against that. Like if mulching it now would like get you 2 more points than you would get if you kept it around, or 1 more point that you did if you would keep it around, then just mulch it now.
Yeah.
Okay, I think that's all I have for strategy.
Yep, that's about it for me too.
So before we get into the design of the game, we have a couple quick plugs. Mm-hmm. You can follow us on social media at BG Bros Cast. You can go to our website, bgbcast.com. You can hit us up with suggestions on our socials for games that we haven't talked about yet if you'd like to hear our thoughts on them. We take every request to heart, and so far we've played every game that's been requested of us to play. You can find a link to our TeePublic store on our website, or go to teepublic.com/user/bgbcast, where we have our merch, and we have a Patreon.
Yeah. So the Patreon is patreon.com/user/bgbcast. I haven't been able to really get any episodes out recently, and I think due to recent events, I'm going to hold off until July to actually release new episodes. But on there are 2 ongoing series. There is Board Game Bros The Dusty Shelf, where every month I choose a classic game that we don't normally talk about on the podcast to dust off, play, give my thoughts on it, give a little bit of history behind it. So the 2 episodes I've done of that were on Uno and Scrabble, respectively. So if you're interested in classic games, check that out. And then also, I do Board Game Bros Let's Make a Game, in which I make a game over the course of the podcast. This includes things like brainstorming, talking about playtesting and prototyping. Also, with those, you can get some cool screenshots of behind-the-scenes action. Of like, you know, prototype materials and stuff like that. Get all the nitty gritty. Or you can just support us for like $1 and get a shout out I think it's just a shout out. We don't have any extra shout outs at the moment, but if you support us, we will shout you out in our next episode. And then also,
all right.
I want to plug my stream, twitch.tv/twack. That is twitch.tv/TWAK. I stream Monday, Wednesday, Friday from about 1 p.m. Central Time to 5 p.m. Central Time. I play a lot of roguelites. I speedrun. I play some other games. Recently, I've been playing Fortune Street on Fridays, and it's terrible and it's torturous, but it's fun. So come check that out. There's also a Discord server where you can hang out with us and ask us questions and talk with other fans of our stuff. And also, if you are looking for another way to support me, I now have fun Twitch emotes. Hoo-ha.
All right. And I have a Twitch stream on Wednesdays every evening. In the evenings on Wednesdays, twitch.tv/RadicalHawks. That's twitch.tv/Radical, H-A-W-K-Z. All right. Let's talk about game design.
Yes.
So I think the one thing that we should definitely start off talking about is that this game is an exceptional marriage of concept and mechanic, or flavor and mechanic.
Yeah.
Because like the mechanics of this game, like catching sunlight, spending it to grow things, and the whole shadow mechanic is just like super understandable just based on the concept of the game, that it's like sun, trees, and shadows.
Right.
Like, legit literal shadows cast from the trees.
Yeah, it's a super, like, it's a pretty well-known real thing, just in general, of taller trees blocking out smaller trees.
Yeah, you can picture, you know, the shadows in your mind being cast across the board. And what this does is it creates this, like, strategy framework for a super interesting abstract area control game.
Right, yeah. It's like the theme definitely illustrates sort of a general idea of how to play. I mean, it definitely helps make the whole sunlight and shadow mechanic understandable.
And it's important that it be understandable, just because, like, you need to be able to predict how the sun and the shadows are going to look in, you know, the next turn or the turn after that. And, you know, just being able to mentally draw those lines in your head as you look at the board is super easy. It's kind of like, it's hard to look at a chessboard and see where every piece is, you know, is threatening. It's hard to see, like, where all the spaces a knight is threatening, all the spaces the bishops and the rooks and the queen are threatening. But in this game, it's incredibly easy to tell all the spaces that any given tree, or even all trees on the board at any given time, are casting shadows on.
Right. Part of that is the component design, which is, like, super well thought out. Like, the sunlight marker that goes around the board has arrows that point down the different rows of spaces to help show, like, this is the direction the shadow will be cast. And also, I mean, like, the trees are all these, like, cardboard standees, but the different sizes definitely help you, like, visualize everything better.
Right.
They definitely, three-dimensional element.
They definitely designed each piece, you know, size and visually to, you know, easily be able to tell, like, which trees are small, medium, and large. So you can easily assume how big the shadows will be from those given trees.
Right. And like you said, this is all for, like, this area control game that's kind of abstract. I think it's weird. We disagreed about how abstract it was, but then I think I've sort of flip-flopped on it.
Okay.
So I guess abstract is a term that I think is kind of hard to define, except by looking at existing games that are considered abstract. Like, I tend to think of it like a game where you could remove the theme and it still functions, or, like, it's very lightly themed, but, like, super lightly themed, like chess. Chess has an obvious warfare theme, but it's pretty removed from that. But the more I think about photosynthesis, the more I think it can't be removed from its theme because of how intertwined they are.
Sure.
Because, like you said, the theme really helps make this whole shadow thing understandable.
I think you could potentially remove the tree aspect of the theme, but definitely the sunlight aspect has to remain in the game, no matter, like, what you're growing. You could be, like, building towers or whatever, and you start with, like, just mapping the plot and then building the first and then the second and then the third level, kind of like Santorini. But because there's this like sunlight thing and you have to catch the sunlight or cast shadows and your shadow lengthens depending on height, that's definitely a, like a very physical thematic aspect that you couldn't take from the game.
Right. So the other thing about having it be this theme is like it like I said, it illustrates a real world concept. I mean, I don't know how like commonly known this is. I assume it's pretty commonly known, just that like there are basically in forests, there are just trees that block out all the other trees from living because they're so tall.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that there can't be these like tiny trees down in the underbrush or whatever.
Although there are, you know, this actually brings up an idea I have for like an expansion. I don't know if there are any expansions for photosynthesis, but there could be like photosynthesis, like mushroom expansion or like ground,
right,
like moss expansion, where it's about like plants that thrive in low light environments. I don't know, maybe you add like hex tiles to the game that you can build on the terrain underneath the trees. Anyways, that's a side point, but yes, but yeah, it's like a real world scientific concept that, you know, you could, if you don't quite exactly know it, you can still pretty much you know that trees need sunlight and they cast shadows, and yeah,
right,
it just makes sense.
And yeah, and it definitely kind of illustrates that as you're playing too. It's not just like, here's a trivia fun fact, large trees prevent all other trees from growing. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, you play through the game and after a few turns you realize that one player has such a control of shadow over everybody else. It's like, oh, I get it now. There's sort of an unfolding to it.
Going back to the idea of whether or not this is an abstract game, beyond like theme discussions, I think strategy-wise, it has a lot of comparisons to other abstract games. There, like, for example, we talked in this game about like openings and frameworks, which are both parts of chess and Go. Like, there's different, like, because, and they are a part of chess and Go because, like, the pieces are, like, tools, and you use them, you know, you use them however you want. You use the pieces in different ways. Like, a piece doesn't do what that piece does necessarily in this game. A piece does what you make it do. Does that make sense?
Yeah, every piece is like a Swiss Army knife.
Compare that to, like, a game where you have, like, this is, you know, the spell card that deals 5 damage to a piece or to a unit. Like, that spell card can't be used in any other way other than to deal 5 damage to a unit. But like in this game, you can choose whether a piece, like, just based on how you place it and grow it, like, this piece is meant to just give me points, this piece is meant to block my opponent's pieces, this piece is meant to gather sunlight, this piece is meant to just secure this part of the board. It's not meant to like turn into points or sunlight or anything, but it's always the same piece that's doing this. That's similar to like in chess, where like this piece is meant to just secure the center of the board, this piece is meant to attack my opponent's king, this piece is meant to break open my opponent's pawn structure. So there is that aspect. There's like, and there's the opening theory, there's like frameworks, like I said. So I think in that case, like, you could make an argument that there's very abstract mechanics and strategy to this game, that I think is something that's missing from like lots of other games that we discuss. I think that's kind of admirable about this game, that it made, you know, such a strategic depth with right. very simple mechanics.
Right. Something I think is admirable, it's that it's a very passive area control game. Mm-hmm. So like, there's so many area control games that are like, you know, you have military and you fight your opponents for control over spaces. I mm-hmm. mean, maybe not necessarily in those words, but like, we've covered a lot of them too. Small World, Tiny Epic Kingdoms, Terra Mystica, sort of stuff like that. I see the sentiment a lot, that just like, there's a lot of direct aggression in conflict, and there's a lot of room left for indirect conflict or like a more creative form of aggression.
Mm-hmm.
And photosynthesis, I think, stands out so much because its theme is so unique for an area control game. Like, it plays like, I could imagine almost the shadows instead being line of sight for like archers or something, you know. But the theme is so unique for an area control game because it's kind of calm and serene, and like I said, it's less aggressive. However, the mechanics make it the same amount of like battling as any other area control game.
Sure, just from the like same amount of competition with your opponents.
Yeah, like the tone of the players is the same, but the tone of the game is much more calm.
I think this kind of takes me in like three different directions on ways that this benefits the game compared to another abstract game like chess. And so the first way is that obviously, and I think this is to the game's benefit, is that it can have more than two players play it. Because if you have this like direct aggression in a very simple game, then it's hard to, you know, balance out players ganging up on one another or feeling like they're being ganged up on. And then in terms of like, especially like a new player experience with this passive game, first of all, it feels bad when you like lose out on a lot of pieces or get crushed. In this game, it doesn't really have that. You're just kind of always thriving, sometimes more so than other times, but you're still like never not doing anything or never just being like whittled away. And then the other part, which I think is the most important point, is that in games where there is this element of like direct competition and capturing things or destroying things, you can kind of get caught up in that destruction or capture and lose sight of what the actual goal of the game is. So like in chess, you might just get too fixated on taking the opponent's queen that you'll forget that you have to eventually checkmate the king.
Yeah.
In this game, that doesn't exist. Like you're just kind of always focusing on your goal, which is collecting sunlight and getting points. There is, you could get a little fixated on like building trees up and blocking your opponents, but by doing so, you're still progressing towards the victory condition. And it's not like in chess where it's like, oh, I fixated on catching the queen and I did all these things and now I caught the queen, so now I can take the king much easier than my opponent can take mine. But right. In this game, it's like, well, I was focusing on growing trees. I let me just mulch him now for points.
Right. Yeah. I think the sunlight rotation helps in a lot of ways with this, because so like it's pretty hard to get zero sunlight for an entire rotation, you know. So it means that players who don't have as big control can still get sunlight as resources, which is obviously very important. Also, it means that the way you attack isn't necessarily one-sided, which you could picture that as bad because like two good players will always incidentally attack a smaller player or a weaker player. But at the same time, it means that there's no, like you said, ganging up. Everyone's kind of affected equally by the sun rotating.
Right.
Casting shadows. Because
if you try to cast a shadow on your opponent's piece, then in the future, that piece could then cast a shadow back at you when the sun goes to the opposite side of the board.
Additionally, the way mulching works also helps with this, because players who are really good at like managing their first few turns to get a ton of sunlight, like, you know, they might control the center quicker, or they might get some other large trees quicker, but because they have to mulch them to get points, it opens up space for those weaker players to then get a good burst of sunlight in that opening.
Right. Back to strategy, you should mulch your tree when it's about to not cast any important shadows.
Yeah.
In the middle of the game.
Right, yeah. In that regard, like, the whole gameplay loop kind of helps keep players in.
Do you have any more like high concept design points to make? Because I have a couple more specific ones, like sort of more detail oriented ones.
I guess this is kind of obvious, but the game intentionally makes good sunlight and good points the opposite, as like there's not really any spaces that do both. Like, we say that, you know, the center, if you have a large tree, gets you good sunlight almost no matter what.
But it takes a long time to get there. And like you said, like, you kind of need to mulch that tree in the middle of the game because you need that large tree to make points elsewhere.
Right, yeah. And while it's growing the whole time, it pretty much won't get any sunlight.
Right. This is, it's like probably going to be covered on all six sides by something.
this is pretty much pretty common to avoid snowballing in games, is just make the thing that wins and the thing that progresses your, like, econ or game state or whatever kind of opposite. I mean, mm-hmm. we say that the tree is the same either way, but, like, the fact that the position matters so much is very important. It also, I mean, it also, like, it makes sense, I guess, that the side that's closer to the sun is, like, more dried up, whereas the part that's inward and a bit more shaded has all this, like, grass on the ground. Like, visually, it kind of fits that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They at least represent it well by having all this dirt in the outer ring to show, like, yeah, this is definitely low points but high sunlight. Mm-hmm. Sort of like a desert. Yeah. I think, you know, you can look at most games that have this sort of gameplay loop and you'll see that same difference.
Mm-hmm. All right. Just for a couple, like, more detail-oriented design points... they do a good job to squash the range of numbers. All the numbers that in this game are 1, 2, 3, or 4.
Or 5.
So, like, or 5, I guess. Yeah, 1 to 5. 5 only appears once when you're acquiring your second large tree. Otherwise, it takes, like, up to 4 to purchase an item. It costs 4 sunlight to mulch a large tree. And it costs like 1 to 3 to get most other things in the game. Plus, all of your trees will give you 1 to 3 sunlight. So that's an exceptionally small range of numbers that helps to, you know, keep track of like what you can do on a turn, or it just keeps numbers low, which means there's less to think about numbers and more to think about the other strategy points of this game. And then the other thing I wanted to say was that the materials in this game, like the pieces themselves, are generally decent. I think the like interlocking cardboard trees can get a little worn out over time and start to kind of fall apart. So that can be a little frustrating. But for, you know, what they are, I'm sure they're probably very cost effective. Yeah, for what they are, they're pretty solid.
Right. Something I love is that all the different colors of trees are also different types of trees that have pretty distinct outlines. Like, sure. The blue trees are, like, pines or fir trees.
Well, the blue trees are a little, like, more different than the other. The other three are a little more close together in their appearances.
They still have pretty unique shapes compared to the other ones. Like, they're distinct enough. Also, the seeds all have different shapes on them, different artwork.
Sure.
And this is just, like, a pretty typical way to help colorblindness. Mm-hmm. Is to, whenever there's a difference in color, add a difference in shape or iconography.
Mm-hmm. They also have different creatures, like every type of... I think they have different kinds of creatures in their branches. Like all the orange trees have like squirrels, maybe.
Maybe.
And all the green trees have flowers, which aren't creatures, potentially. I feel like I might remember that wrong, but that might be the case.
Right. This is also sort of a more... side note, personal thing, but I really like how when you have large trees closer to the center of the board and smaller trees on the outside, it kind of looks like a mountain.
Mm-hmm.
That's just kind of nifty. I like that as a consequence of the mechanics.
The board does look very cool in like the mid to late game when it's just filled with trees.
Yeah.
It's a very interesting looking game.
Yeah, I guess the last thing is there's a lot of numbers on the player board, which I've seen, like, every time a new player has played this game, it's taken getting used to that,
mm-hmm.
as well as the whole, like, purchasing to your inventory and then purchasing to upgrade, or, like, paying to upgrade.
Yeah, that mechanic is a little strange.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess it helps. So I think one thing is that while you don't have to pay sunlight for buying things unless you need them, it does help to, like, make it feel like you're being productive even if you're not.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, on a turn where you can't actually upgrade a tree, you could still buy it, and then it feels like you're still doing something that turn.
Sure.
Which, yeah. It's not a huge, loss, or, like, a huge... It's not a bad decision, necessarily. And I think it has something to be said for, like, it's a pretty punishing abstract game at times, but having that part still kind of keeps you involved.
Mm-hmm. Well, but, I guess it there is the fact that you could afford a large tree by buying the large tree one turn and then upgrading it the next turn.
But that's
like early on in the game.
Right. But that actually doesn't matter because it's the same amount of sunlight if you wait a turn.
Oh yeah, fair point.
Yeah. But I'm just saying like it's like a psychological thing, you know.
Sure.
But yeah, the mechanics of the whole inventory thing. I wonder if it would help if there was a physical inventory. Mm-hmm. Like you have the nursery and then you have like your truck or whatever. I don't know.
You know, another point is that like that part of the game doesn't really make sense with the theme of the game.
Yeah.
Like you don't need to like the nature doesn't need to go down to Home Depot and buy a larger tree to put it in the place of a medium tree.
Yeah. That's like it, everything else is you are playing as nature, as the trees. Mm-hmm. But like that is a bit more like removed from that.
Yeah. So I see one reason why it could be in the game, and I'm not sure if this is the case. Maybe this was just in the design the whole time and it just worked out this way. But the way that the shop works and the cost of upgrading does allow you to keep the numbers low, like we mentioned, between 1 and 5. Because if you remove the shop and just say like, oh, you just take a tree off your board and play it on the board when you want to make an upgrade, you know, then that would sort of like that would mean that your large trees would have to cost like 7 to put on the board.
Right.
If because just the way that you generate sunlight in this game, that's the fair amount of money that you should have to pay to build a large tree.
Right. It also technically means your first few trees are cheaper than everything else. And it's a relatively clean way to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Because you already have them purchased, which sure. I think helps the early game. Definitely.
Yeah, it probably helps the math a lot to have the game be set up this way.
Yeah.
Interesting to see what the game would look like, like how you would balance the costs if it wasn't so. But yeah, I there is sort of a disconnect with the theme there, and also a sort of a difficult concept to wrap your head around just for a new player.
Yeah.
Do you have anything else to say about photosynthesis?
Very, very not really about photosynthesis at all. But there's a Rush song about trees and how some of them get more sunlight than others. And it's a metaphor for class struggle. And apparently that's one of our dad's favorite Rush songs. So happy Father's Day.
Happy Father's Day, Dad. This Rush song mention goes out to you. All right. Thank you for listening to our episode on photosynthesis, everyone. We will see you in 2 weeks to discuss our next thing. I think we're going to do a mechanical or a game genre discussion next week or next episode. So keep your ears peeled for that.
See you later.